Blog Talk Radio.
Pardon me. Let me read it again. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Saturday's edition of Exploring a Crisis. For those of you checking out the program board, no, that was not She's Like the Wind with Patrick Swayze. That was the Technology Gremlins are having sport with us this evening. That was actually our original intro music, that is the overture from Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky, which I thought was very appropriate for the beginning programs that we had started a couple of years ago. And it's actually been 2 years, believe it or not. I checked my calendar. March was 2 years, so it's pretty amazing that you folks are still around, and I'm still around, and we're still writing. And Modest Mussorgsky is still around and decided to remind us he's still there to this evening. So anyway, welcome all. And who do we have out in the bleacher seats? Do we have my co-pilot?
Hello, Captain. This is your co-pilot speaking, Gray Eye Smith.
Hey, strap in.
Yeah.
I tell you, seriously, this contest, I swear to God, as I was putting it out on the board, as I was reading the entries as they were coming in, I thought to myself, oh, I want to read this one. Oh, and I want to read this one. I wanted to read them all, you know, out loud. Oh, my God, no, that's greedy. So, but they're all so outstanding that I just really think we have a really fine crop of entries here. The contest was, there's the right website. I'm looking at too many tabs open here. Okay, the contest was the Encaustic Painterly Portrait of Thomas Dodd. And that's why I was going to have She's Like the Wind, sung by Patrick Swayze, because most of the, well, I would say most all of the artwork, the fonts, are very ethereal. They're very spiritual looking. I mean, they've got women that are inspirational and just make you wonder what they're thinking. You know, just it's beautifully inspirational artwork and portrays women as essentially very spiritual creatures. So anyway, but we'll have Patrick Swayze over another time. So I'm sure I'm sure he sees it. So anyway, do we have any callers?
We do. We have Weaver of Dreams, a.k.a. Katie McDonald.
Oh, God love that woman. Where's my saucy Scott?
Hi, Katie.
Where's my saucy Scott? Trot her out here.
Right here, my darling.
Hi, you darling. You're such a darling girl.
You're so sweet. I'm so pleased to be here.
Thank you for calling in, darling. Yeah, I always love hearing you on the other end. You always add a little bit of Scottish spice to the show. I appreciate that. So,
thank you.
Okay. Well, we had, I think, let's see, we had, what, 13, 14 entries? I'm going to go back and look. I figured we had enough to cover this evening and then some. So, I doubt seriously we're going to run out of things to read. But if we do, I'll make balloon animals and Gray Eyes can do a little tap dance and we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
My balloon animals are always a big hit.
I can do one. It's a snake.
I usually just end up making a hat.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started then, shall we? Everyone has a libation and a comfortable seat. And let's trot the poetry out here.
Okay, just so you know, I don't see any sound clouds in the studio as far as this show is concerned.
Okay, I sent them to Phil at 8 o'clock this evening, so perhaps I didn't meet her deadline. Just apologies to the – we had three. When Mazursky came up, I figured, that she hadn't gotten the things loaded, and I probably had sent them to her a little too late in the day. I was busy trying to help her find out. So ate up a lot of my time, and I was like, I need to get some stuff done, please. So anyway, okay. Well, Weaver can channel Weaver. You know, she can always read. And as to the others, we'll just one's male, and we'll figure it out. So, but thanks for letting me know.
Okay.
All righty. Sure, let's jump right in. Of course, we have Ben Hart to start. And yeah. I'll go ahead and read him, since he's always rather lengthy. We have Ben Hart, Forget-Me-Nots. Okay, let me open this up. And I think he's treated us to a little bit of his own artwork at the top here, too. My brakes only work on the passenger side, but I haven't had a passenger in ages. Only hitchhikers going backwards, the right faces and false memories. 2. I burn shed skin plates to whisper smokes of suicide notes, burned before reading into the nude floral dust. There was another false alarm on my part. 3. Two nails I forgot to polish, so I would stop chewing them. Glitter shrapnel embedded between my teeth. You call them constellations of anxiety in a yellow graveyard. What a cruel thing to call a smile. 4. I mistook my heart in amber and made its last words before going under a stone throw meant to shatter you. 5. No shore remembers being born of glass. Only the tide that deepened with dust. Brooke calls her mother. 6. My hands fold words into paper birds. Yours fold lovers into gardens of scorpion glass. A promise unkept. 7. For a second, when I'm dressing the painted body, the world stopped breathing the color, and all of autumn was us. 8. You called the moon and daylight a gravestone. but it's more like an unlit porch light that cannot picture our silhouettes outside the depth of nightfall. 9. Midnight was never a bridge, just the turning of the hourglass, another funnel to fit through, another fall to the bottom of a bottle. They never spun it towards me. So kiss me in the closet until I'm small. 10. Polaroids of us naked may fade to gray. For us, they will remain blossoms of dusk. And his author's note, end poem, his author's note, I have so much love for this piece, maybe not for what it is, but for what I was not feeling, but I was not feeling great this weekend, and this gave me some freedom back. So thank you, Thomas Dodd, for the visual inspiration, and thank you, Lizzie McAlpine and Angus and Julia Stone, for the beautiful music that drew this out of me. And his artwork at the top is called Blossoms of Dusk. So there you have it. Weaver, would you like to start the comments?
I certainly would. Now that I've got myself off mute, as always, Ben's artwork is incredible. I'm sorry, is anybody else hearing that horrible noise again? Oh, thank goodness. Maybe I've gone. Are you still there?
I am. The noise is gone, though.
Oh, thank goodness. That is awful. I don't know how you managed to talk to that, because it makes my brain hurt. Okay, thank you. I think it must be Grey Eyes. Thank you, Grey, for going on mute. It's wonderful. Yes, back to poetry. There's so many things in this to take apart and look at, but I was... I burned shed skin flakes to whisper smoke signals of suicide notes burned before reading into the nude coral dust. It was another false alarm on my part, which was good to know. And this is it. There's an awful lot of this going through, isn't there? It's that somebody is dealing with something that they are finding it hard to. It's full of pain and worry, and I hope it is just fictional, but it's beautifully, beautifully read, by the way, and beautifully written. There's so much in this to take in. Another fall to the bottom of the bottle. They never spun it towards me, so kiss me in the closet until I'm small. I like that so much. Kiss me in the closet until I'm small. Thank you, Ben, for sharing that. That was lovely, but sad.
It was. As I was reading it and listening and looking at it, just the way he's got it divided, the analogy of a fan comes to mind, a lady's fan. How, as you unfold it, each mm-hmm. pleat is an individual pleat, but it's all part of the whole.
Gotcha.
And that's what this poem reminds me of, is a lady's fan. How, as it unfolds, each pleat gives you a different part of the story, but it all comes together at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it? You called the moon in daylight a gravestone, but it's more like an unlit porch light that cannot picture our silhouettes outside the depths of nightfall. That right there could be a brevity.
Mm-hmm.
Just beautifully the way it's done. Gray, what did you think?
I like his metaphors and his images. You know, he really is excellent at writing in metaphor. My brakes only work on the passenger side, but I haven't had a passenger in ages. Only hitchhikers mm-hmm. going backwards. The right faces and false memories. He wrote such a powerful imagery that is fantastic. And each stanza stands alone, and you know, like you said, Bobby, as a brevity. And, you know, the whole is exceptional. You know, it really is another show off of his talent, as far as I'm concerned. He is such a talented writer. And, he evokes such emotion with his writes. So well done, Ben. Fabulous read, Bobby.
Absolutely, Ben. It's his writing is like he's a gemstone, and as you examine each facet, you get a different glimpse of the stone. And that just Ben to me. I mean, he's a gemstone, and each time he writes to these contests, he gives us a glimpse from a different facet. So you're a gem, Ben. You really are. And I don't mean that sarcastically. I really do. I mean it's just his writing is we. I always look forward to it. I think we all do. Okay. Well, thank you, Ben. Thank you for that very much. And who we got next? Hello? Have I fallen off? My dead
nope.
Water?
No, I was speaking in mutation, so my apologies.
You're mutated.
Yeah.
That would do it.
All right, so next up we have Tangled Up by A.R. Mundell.
Weaver, would you read it? This needs a lady's voice.
Yes, of course I will. Very happy to. That'll be Amy. So, Tangled Up. My branches tangled up in sight, all weaved as one into the skies. They form a web of creaking sighs, as spiders' fears perfect their prize. My sticky hopes snag up like flies, they can't break free despite their tries. They snap their twigs in short surprise, more lost than they had realized. My flesh fades out to fog disguise, my leaves molt out to lizard piles. As long hairs catch on webs of lies, which drag those hopes to their demise. End poem.
Well done. Nicely done. Gray, would you like to start the comments?
Sure. The viscerals are amazing in this. You know, my branches tangled up inside, all weaved as one into the skies. I thought she captured the prompt quite beautifully. And, you know, there's a feeling of losing oneself and, you know, losing your hopes and your dreams. You know, your flesh fades out to fog disguise, leaves mulch out to littered piles as you fall to pieces. So I thought it was brilliant metaphor and imagery. So great job. Thank you for sharing, Amy, and great read, Weaver.
And you read it. What did you think of it, Weaver?
It was so nice to read. It was just, I wouldn't say it bounced, but it sort of half a skip, half a bounce. It moved very nicely.
It had a good cadence.
Yes, I thought so. And sometimes I can't quite get into the mind of the poet and the cadence and the rhythm that they would like mm-hmm. to use. But this one, after a couple of lines, I knew where I was. And I could then make it the way she meant it to be, I think, which is much nicer. But yeah, there are times when it's not that simple, but this is just lovely. And I like that. The last stanza, I mean, it's so good. As long hair catch on webs of lies, which drag those hopes to their demise. That's just so, and it's not, you know, it's not getting like 10-syllable words chucked at it willy-nilly. This is an honest, beautifully written piece of poetry that you can enjoy without having to think, oh, what does that mean? And am I not quite getting the point here? Which kind of makes...
No, you are.
Yeah. No, I meant when you're thinking about these other pieces of poetry that are a bit, they're wordier, perhaps, and sometimes it is more difficult to understand what the poet's looking for. But this is just lovely. And it's not simple, it's beautiful in its simplicity, and that's the difference. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Amy.
That's what I usually refer to as elegant in its simplicity.
Yes.
I'm looking at the prompt, and it is a lovely picture of a forest. Most of the trees are denuded, and a superimposed is a very ghostly, a phantom-like face and upper shoulders of a young girl with a very wistful, long, faraway look on her face, and almost of longing or of sadness. And I think her interpretation of the prompt. I'm going to come at this technically first. Her interpretation of the prompt, I think, is just beautifully spot on. I mean, my branches tangled up inside, all weaved as one into the skies. She's picked out elements, which and Amy is very, very good at this. She had selected elements of the artwork and woven them through her verse. And this is actually a very economical write for Amy. Usually she writes longer, but and a little bit more. She has quite an extensive vocabulary. But this is, like you said, it's a very economical write. It's very compact, very brief. The rhythm and the cadence of it is beautifully done. It's a very pleasant read. My sticky hopes snag up like flies. They can't break free despite their tries. They snap their twigs in shocked surprise, more lost than they had realized. And she's got a beautiful meter to this whole thing. This is a terrific piece. And it's great storytelling. And the metaphors are beautiful, and it's very emotional. So this is all around great work, Amy. So thank you so much for sharing this with us. And this is from prompt 17. If anyone's looking up the prompts, which I like to do, I mean that I draw a lot of my judging, my evaluation from how people. Well, it's supposed to be how the artwork affects you, but also you've got people like Amy that and Ben and some of the other poets out there that really like to weave elements of the artwork into their poetry, which I love. It makes it just a wonderful tapestry of words. So, Amy, thank you so much for that. And who we got next?
Up next we have, sorry, just have to get back to the group.
We have
Whispering Wavelengths by Fran Marie.
And she says this is adult. So I'll take on any embarrassment that might be in here. For me anyway. Okay, we have Whispering Wavelengths by Fran Marie. And I don't recognize her as a regular entry. So I think we have a new writer here. That's grand. I love that. Seems my dreams wend to capture your wavelengths, magnetizing my sensual senses, your resounding voice echoing enchantment, tender words before my ears. Behold my world. You come to me in night's whispering winds. I tremble, receiving electrifying visions, sounds and sighs, echoes of each one softly calming to my mind in sleepy, warm waves of dulcet tones, each nuance and allure. I breathe your presence, 'tis my existence. I trace your manly face with finding fingers. Compelled am I to search out this whispering dream. You intrigue my deep desires, feeding internal flames of ethereal essence, sending me hot waves, daring the tempest upon my bed, feeding your spirit lying next to me. I love, with crescent eyes and parted lips, yearning for your touch and a sweet lover's embrace, pining to slip into your golden realm, to transcend beyond my gilded crest of fantasy, as whispering wavelengths still echo and dreams tend to wend on their own. End poem. Wow. Beautiful imagery.
Oh, yes.
And the prompt that that she used was prompt 46, which was I found about 30 some odd prompts, and I wasn't satisfied with that, so I went looking for more, and I found another a half dozen, and this one's called Me Encanta. So it's a beautiful thing. It's almost, it almost reminds me a little bit of Klimt, Gustav Klimt.
Mm-hmm.
So, what did you think of this piece?
Yes, beautiful, and that has, and that face. I mean, you could write poetry around that face, couldn't you? I mean, that's what it's there for. So beautiful.
Yes.
And she looks as though she's, I think she looks as though she's slightly, not unhappy, not displeased, but a little bit irked. She's looking down her nose slightly thinking, and a little mouth, a little mouth going, well, I don't think that's very funny. We are not amused. That's what I get from her anyway. So never mind, just that, allow me to get back to the poetry, honestly. I go off on a tangent. I'm sorry, I do tend to do that, but I'll try and keep my mind on the job,
what?
As it were.
No. You're supposed to say what you're thinking. So
okay.
It's interesting. I wouldn't have looked at it that way. I look at it more of her, she's daydreaming.
Ah, yeah.
She's daydreaming. She's got her eyes closed so she can have her visions clearer to her and not mm-hmm. be not be intruded upon by the outside world. So she's dreaming of something or someone, and
mm-hmm.
she's daydreaming. Or she's just drifting off to sleep.
Yeah, could be either one. Really
and
could.
In which case the dreams are real dreams. So I like this one a lot. I think it has, again, great storytelling. It has wonderful metaphor, and I think it's a very artful interpretation of the prompt, whispering wavelengths. And it's one of the reasons I really love the contests, is just that what people see, I like to see through their eyes. You know, when they look at something else, what do they see? It's like what you see and what I see, a totally different thing, but I just find it so intriguing to see, because of course everyone's visions are colored by their experiences, but still, I find it very, like I said, very intriguing to hear what other people and read what other people think when they see something like this. Gray, what are your thoughts on this piece?
I really loved her language that she used in this. You know, I breathe. Your presence
yes.
is my existence. I
yes.
trace your manly face with finding fingers. Held am I to search out this whispering dream. You intrigue my deep desires, feeding internal flames with ethereal essence, sending heat waves. Fearing a tempest on my bed, feeling a spirit lying next to me. You know, when somebody's voice has the ability to transport you to another realm, even though you're in another realm, dreaming, that's a beautiful thing. And I thought it was just a talented write. And you did a good job.
You're right. It's actually very romantic. She put it as adult. I would think it is subtly sensual, but I think it's also deeply romantic and very passionate. So, and as you said, the language is very delicate. So, very artfully done. And thank you, Fran Marie, for your entry. Really appreciate it. Okay, who's next?
All right, here we go. Oh, and the SoundClouds are up now, just so you know.
Yay!
Hello.
All right. I'm posting the next link
okay.
here.
Robbie's got a comment out there. Says, Robbie says, damn, that poem made me nearly faint. I guess Robbie's sliding out of the seat on that one. So, yourself, but I'm glad to hear from him. He's out there in the bleacher seats. So,
yeah.
All righty. Artemis. Okay. As the cosmic fires burn. Okay. Who's, you know what? I think this one might need a male voice. How do you feel about it, Gray?
No problem. Artemis as the cosmic fires burn by Captain Kirk. What can surmount me or merely, or sorry, who can surmount me or defy my rage when laws disaffected and pushed aside? Released from bondage, I hunt nature's cage, charmed by the beauty of a vengeful sky. I string my bow with true and skillful eye. My arrow's tip bestows a pointed thrust, reminding me our mutual fates are tied, mingling my blood endangered in the dust with man, the epitome of pride and mistrust. In flaming vitality, crimson red, igniting sparks of pure and godlike mind, I spawn wilderness from my virgin bed, and unrelenting worship for my kind. By savage darkness reared, devoid and blind, I reached across the black abysmal floor with mammoth oceans teeming from behind. Riled by the impatience creation bore, plunge through womanhood's sensual door. My spirit burnt by dwarf sun's hottest fire, and centrifugal collapsing massive ball. I wander blue sky, burst in green desire, with snow-capped mountain cushioning my fall. On back of imperial stag, I ride forth in terminal flight, my eyes ascending, driven by evolutionary worth, exposing features of my proud and privileged birth. Upon the rampart, as I, as huntress, stand tall, streaming sexuality, pristine and warm, I am no longer framed by barren thought. Creatures breed, rivers rise, and oceans flow. Wanderlusts of green, imaginings caught, propagating desire all across beaming earth. Those lovely sounds heathen winds have learned, echoed by the valleys and burbling brooks, with soft whispered breath, lovers gently turn in carnal anticipation as the cosmic fires burn. End poem.
Nicely done. That was a long one, too.
Thank you.
Great storyteller. She's got in the Arthur's note, he has Artemis in Greek religion, the goddess of wild animals, the hunt and vegetation, and of chastity and childbirth. She was identified by the Romans with Diana.
I'm going to make this, this is an offhand comment, has absolutely no relevance to anything other than the fact that the Greeks called her Artemis and the Romans called her Diana. I once had occasion to meet a woman whose name was Diana Artemis.
Really?
And I'm serious. I marveled at her name, and I told her how much I was amazed. I loved her name, and I had to explain to her why. She did not understand the history, the mythology behind her. I said, "Did you know?" I had to explain it to her. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. Yeah. Yeah, and I will never forget this. Her name was Diana Artemis, and I had to explain it to her. I said, "What a fantastic name! If you had to pick your own name."
Yeah.
She didn't get it. I mean, there's names out there. I once met a young woman whose name was Theodora.
I had to
explain to her that Theodora was a very famous and powerful queen, and she said, "Really?" I said, now you got to go home and look it up.
Yeah.
Named after a very powerful and famous queen. She said, I didn't know that. people with these epic names that have no idea what's behind them. A friend of mine, my office mate a long time ago, he's his daughter and her partner had a grandchild. He was very excited. He had his first grandson. And I said, really? I said, congratulations. I said, what's his name? I said, they're calling him Leo. I said, Leo? I said, Leonard? He said, Leo is short for Leonidas. And he made a face. I said, are you kidding? I said, you realize what nobility there is in that name? I said, been me, I'd have named him Agamemnon, you know. But
yes.
But the kids named, they named him Leonidas.
Wow.
I thought, well, that's a name you're going to have to grow into.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine?
Just an offhand, a little sidebar. And I just, when I read the author's note, I'm reminded every once in a while of Miss Diana Artemis, who did not understand her own name.
Oh, it's scary, isn't it? It really is.
It's disappointing. Disappointing. Yeah, so. People don't, sometimes they don't extend their reach past their own nose. You know,
nope.
It's just, it's always disappointing to me. It's like, you know, it's like telling a joke and then having to explain the punchline.
Exactly.
You know, well, you know, my comeback to that is I look at the person. I am the master of the one-line zinger, and I've disassembled people with my one-liners. And sometimes, and I look at one guy. I said he didn't understand. I said I looked at him. I said you're built too low to the ground. The fast ones are going over your head.
I like that so much.
Oh. Everybody around him understood, but he didn't. It's a battle of wits with an unarmed person. You know, I have fear advantage.
Oh, my. we
can go on and on with that one. So anyway, what did you think of this piece, Weaver?
Oh, yeah. I forgot what we were doing.
Yeah, we're going to go back to the poetry now.
Yep.
Back from tangent land.
We can do this. We can do this. We can surmount me or defy my rage. Who can surmount me or defy my rage when law is disaffected and pushed aside? I don't know. Certainly somebody with a big arrow, a big bow, you wouldn't want to argue with them. By golly, I sing my bow. Which I love archery, by the way. One of my favorite hobbies.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Fabulous. I play. I don't play. What would you say you did with an arrow and a bow? I spring them. Mine is bare bow. I don't have any of these balances and things that people use when they're really into it in a big way. But anyway, back to Artemis.
No, you're back to you're the simple the English longbow.
Yes.
Which was as tall as a man.
I need one that's as tall as a midget, but never mind.
what did you think of Captain Kerr's storytelling here?
Very good. I must admit, you could see, you could feel. He's put so much into this, and so he's given you these word pictures. Which I find fascinating because I can't really visualize very easily for some reason. I don't know. I mean, I know what an apple looks like, but I couldn't visualize it. It would be an apple. And anyway, back to this. So this is great that he has got this ability to give us everything that we need to know. But that last stanza, by savage darkness veered, devoid and blind, I reach across the black abysmal floor with mammoth
ocean. Yes.
From behind, riled by the impatient trace and bore, plunge through womanhood's sensual door. That's just brilliant. I really like that a lot.
It's got a great cadence. And if you know, some of these stanzas are four lines and some of them are five lines.
I see that. Yes.
But he's balanced them very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a good cadence. It's superb storytelling. On back of imperial stag, I ride forth in terminal flight, my eyes ascending, driven by evolutionary worth, exposing features of my proud and privileged birth. Upon the rampart, I as huntress stand tall, streaming sexuality, pristine and warm. I'm no longer framed by barren thought. Creatures breed, rivers rise, and oceans flow. Wanderlusts of green imaginings caught propagating desire across beaming earth. I mean, this is beautiful. I mean, this is very lyrical, the way he has done this, and all from this from the image by Thomas Todd. So a great piece of poetry. Gray, what were your thoughts on your reading?
Yeah, I enjoyed reading it. You know, like you said, it had a lyrical flow to it. You know, but the imagery is fantastic. It's very upfront and, you know, revealing its direction and purpose quite clearly. But, you know, like streaming sexuality, pristine and warm. I'm no longer framed by barren thought. Creatures breed, rivers rise, and oceans flow. Wanderlusts of green imaginings caught, propagating desire all across beaming earth. Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed the stand that this person takes as Artemis, you know.
Yes. Makes it very powerful.
I thought he painted it. Yeah, it is. These lovely sounds heathen winds have learned, echoed by valleys and burbling brooks with soft whisper of breath, lovers gently turn in carnal anticipation as the cosmic fires burn. You know, that's just so poetic and engaging. So just a beautiful job.
Yeah, I'm looking at it also from technical standpoint again, and there may be a name to this particular style of poetry, because the rhyming is A-B-A-B, and then the second stanza is when it goes into the five lines. I string my bow with true and skillful eye. My arrow's tip bestows a pointed thrust, reminding me our mutual fates are tied, mingling my blood engendered in the dust with man, the epitome of pride and mistrust. And he's got eye and tide, thrust, dust, and mistrust. And then you've gone back to four lines, red mind, bed kind. And then again, blind, floor, behind, bore, door. It's beautifully done. I mean, just the formatting of it, just the structure. I'm going to have to look and see if that – I strongly suspect there's a name to this particular style. And if there isn't, then certainly the artistic license taken in the constructing of this piece is really beautiful. I really found it's like you said, it's very strong, a lot of very strong emotions, great storytelling, and beautifully constructed. So, Captain Kerr, well done, and thank you. And we're going to leave Artemis and go someplace else. And where?
So we have night visits. Night visit by Hats.
Okay. All righty. Weaver, would you like to read that, please?
Of course, I'd be happy to. Okay. Night visit. I raised my face to the window. The moon floated among clouds like a big cheese loaf. Moonbeams shone through the window. The pictograms of the patterned curtains danced on the ground near my skin. Chilly night wind blew, and with the wind, as if his invisible avatar had slipped into a room. Did he hear the call of my body? Slowly the room filled into his curry scent. He kissed my skin with cold lips. Spelled his voodoo imprinting. The coldness turned into hot lava as he leaned to my thighs and set me on fire. Then the moon went behind a cloud and a shadow enveloped me. End poem.
Beautifully done. Thank you. Gray, would you like to start the comments?
Sure. You did a great read of that, Weaver. I liked it a lot, you know. How he comes in with the moon and, you know, and then when the moon goes away, she is shadow, enveloped by a shadow. You know, it just is so ethereal and enchanting, this dream lover that she has with her night visit, with his night visit. It's definitely imaginative and palpable, so great job.
The prompt that she selected was number 41, which is entitled Slumber, which is it's a reclining nude. She's face down. Her face is covered partially by her hair. And it looks like there's just a beam of light coming through a window, just shining on her partially. I love how she's called it. She's called it night visit. Moon floated among the clouds, moonbeams thrown through the window. I mean, she's captured that beautifully. On the ground and on my skin, chilly night blew them in and with the wind, as if an invisible avatar had slipped into a room. And I love the way she just isolates. All of a sudden, did he hear the call of my body? All of a sudden, she just isolates that one question out there, and then she proceeds to follow it with the last stanza. And this is captivating. The way she's set the stage from the prompt, and then she's carried the story into a different direction, which I think is wonderfully imaginative, and I guess this would be called a brevity. It's not. I didn't do a word count, which God knows who is it. Harco Parco, you know, would smack me on the nose with a rolled up newspaper if I said it was brevity. If it was any longer than 100 words.
Oh yeah.
Can you say pedantic?
Yeah. Paco Paco.
Yeah. There it is. Weaver, what did you think of this beautiful piece by Hats?
Oh my, she's a talented lady. It's
yes,
lovely.
She is
really. I think her work is becoming more and more finely tuned.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely
agreed.
Think that. Yeah. She's
agreed.
Because there are things coming through now that she may not have used the word she's used now a few months ago. So I love that. I love the fact that she's opened herself up to different ways of writing things, and this is a different way, and it's beautiful. It really is. I love the question. Like you said, that's just a lovely little,
yes.
An intimate little moment that
yeah.
She said, did she hear me? Is he, you know, is he going to come to me? That is just lovely, and it sets up for the rest of
this is a little emotional pivot point.
Yes.
All of a sudden, now you've got the two stanzas describing her reclining under the moonlight, and then all of a sudden it's pivoted to slowly the room filled into his current curried scent. He kissed my skin with cold lips, spelled his voodoo imprinting. The coldness turned to hot lava. I mean, just beautifully done. Great storytelling. So thank you, Hats, for that entry. Really appreciate that.
Wonderful.
All righty. Yes. So let us move along. And who do we have next? We have, I know this girl. Have we got her SoundCloud? Do we have the SoundCloud?
We do. Yes.
Yay!
We have
okay, lay it on.
Love is complicated. Love is complicated by Weaver Dreams.
Yes.
And I will get the SoundCloud going here. Here we go.
Perhaps I should have been more aware of the subliminal clues when we first met. But this was a new relationship. You were gorgeous and I was smitten. I was a fool. I was delighted when you asked me to move in with you. It was fast, but we were in love. After a few weeks, the alarm bell started to ring. Stealthy, slow erosion of my persona began. You pointlessly criticized me. You tried to isolate me from my friends by using threatening tactics. Then came the spying on me, giving me ultimatums, saying you distrusted me, to manipulate and control. I tried to show how much I loved you, thinking you must have been badly hurt by someone in your past. Nothing helped. If I said I wanted to buy a new dress or perhaps visit the hairdresser, you became very angry. You said I could only afford luxuries because you paid all the household bills, when I had offered to pay half. I had not realized how much this subtle torture affected me until my friends organized an intervention at the flat. They arrived en masse, packed up my life and saved me. Lastly, you were told to leave me alone, or they'd reveal all.
Wow. Weaver, would you like to say anything about your piece?
No, only that picture just gave me the idea. You know, that poor girl with the carrot and the stick. And it just brought that to mind, and that was it. It was quite an easy write, in fact, quite a simple write, but I enjoyed it.
Well, I found it a little bit scary because I felt like you were looking over my shoulder for part of it.
Oh, I was.
Yeah. I mean, I would say 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. The first 16 lines, that was my relationship with my partner, my late partner, pointlessly criticizing me. I tried to isolate me from my friends, started spying on me, giving me ultimatum. Yeah, and just the way you described it is just so, it is exactly how insidious it was. Because once we came together in one household, and I was just delighted that at 45 years of age, I was actually being able to start another relationship after being divorced for 8 years. But it was so, the encroachment on my persona and the erosion was so insidious that I didn't realize until it was almost over. And what ended it was him dying.
Oh, my goodness. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, yep. He died in his sleep. And then afterwards, people come up, my friends coming up to me and telling me, you know, this is what you used to be like. This is what you're happy now. And I'm so glad that, you know, and they felt bad saying that. But you know, so this is really very, it's very close to home for me. And beautiful, but beautifully written and with such precision. That well done, Weaver.
Thank you.
Greg,
thank you.
Greg, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, that was an incredible write, and the read was spot on. But you know, this reminds me of my mom's relationship with my father. You know, he ended up holding her in a trailer by shotgun and had to be taken away by the police because he'd lost his damn mind because she was leaving and moving away.
Wow.
And that was his one last try to stop was have it hold her by a shotgun. And so, you know, he was taken away by the police. But, yeah, you know, it really does. It's tragic when love becomes abusive and controlling on one partner's behalf or the other. It's very tragic and definitely regrettable for sure. So I thought it was fantastic, right? It's almost as if you lived that situation yourself, Weaver.
Wow. Yeah, it goes from love to incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. getting accused of things that you never did.
Mm-hmm.
Getting rage thrown at you for the most trivial of infractions,
yep.
Like you brought home two loaves of bread instead of one.
Horrible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and all the time you're engaging in what I call magical thinking, thinking that, okay, this person's been very damaged.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show them by loving them that, you know, that things can be better than this. But they're so damaged that you don't realize how damaged they are until they start damaging you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
It is. It's not nice at all. And it's also the feeling that any feelings that you might have either become you're getting neurotic or you're sounding crazy or you're making it up in your head and you know it's lies, but you cannot deal with somebody who lies. It's impossible.
Well,
I'm a person who will say I fell down and I got up. This other person would say you made me fall down and I had to get up.
Yeah.
That's the difference. So yeah, I understand entirely, and I'm so sorry.
And the imagined transgressions, like, well, you've been gone for 6 hours. Where have you been? I, told you I was going to the Gem and Jewelry Show at the conference center. You know, it's a big conference center. 6 hours is nothing. I wanted to see it all. You know, and it's like, well, you're meeting someone. You think if you say and do the right thing, that all of this will go away and they'll realize what an ass they're being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't all horrible, but it was very turbulent. There were some good parts to it. There were some bad parts to it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, the ending of it was his departing the planet. You know,
wow.
He left.
You might still have been in that relationship. I developed a fabulous way of dealing with it when I got the anger or whatever thrown at me out of the blue. That's what really hurts you, because it's for no reason.
Yes,
out of the blue,
yes.
You get this screaming in your face.
Yes.
So now, I'm not saying then, not now, then, all I said was, I'm not listening. I'm not engaging you. You're not winding me up this time.
Yeah.
Go away. You're behaving like a child. And then more and more annoyed. And I laughed. I just kept laughing. And just leave me alone. I'm not interested in this conversation. And it worked. It worked. You know, so.
Yeah, you have to develop your own survival tactics. Like I had the constant drip, drip, drip of criticism. And me wanting to be, I'm a people pleaser, and I wanted to make him happy. And, you know, and it started out great and turned into a horror show. But honestly, I was coming to the end of my tether with him, and he had actually been hospitalized for a heart condition. Strangely enough, in that week that he was in the hospital, he'd never been hospitalized before. he saw a side of me that I don't think he expected. I was there every day. I was there every day. I would bring him a sandwich from Wegmans. I would bring him some kind of a sandwich. I'd bring him iced tea. I would sit with him. Every day.
Wow.
And when I came to, and when he was released, and I came to pick him up, he looked at me. He says, I don't know what to say. I can't thank you enough. I said, what'd you expect?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what else? I said, I'm your partner. Uh-huh. What else would I do?
Mm-hmm.
I care about you. And he was released on a Friday, and the following Tuesday he was gone.
Oh my goodness!
But in those few days, I saw a change in his attitude toward me. That he realized, I think, that he was undervaluing me.
Mm-hmm.
Not too late for me, because at least he had an epiphany. Better from him to have had it and then gone than not have had it at all. Because as it was, not traveling too much further down this road, I had enough unresolved issues with him that it took another year of counseling afterwards for me to put some things aside.
Uh-huh. Oh,
because
I can imagine.
So many unfinished issues and, you know, unresolved things. So, yeah. So it was kind of like... I don't know. It's like when my mom died. They say there's 7 stages of grief. When my mom died, there was only 3. The first one was, God damn you, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was, that woman. I'm living in Virginia. I'm having to go to Chicago to empty her house because that's where I grew up.
Uh-huh.
And the third stage was, the argument's over. I won. but people ask me this, because we had just as we left to go to Chicago, there was this enormous snowstorm here in the Virginia area that they called Snowmageddon in 2010. It was shut the entire city down for like 2 weeks. I'm being held hostage in Chicago. It was actually fortuitous. It was a gift, because that would allow me 2 weeks unscheduled leave to start emptying my mom's house out after she'd lived there for 50 plus years.
Yeah.
And people asked me, I said, well, you know, you went home to bury your mom. I said, yes, I did. And they said, well, how was it? I said the whole experience was very Egyptian. And they look at me, and
uh-huh.
they said, really? What do you mean? I said, it was a burial followed by an archaeological dig. So he started excavating her house.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God, layer upon layer. Year after year.
Yeah, and of course, that generation, when you bought them something and they didn't want to use it because they wanted to save it, and you end up finding a bag of towels that were brand new that still had the tags on them.
Yep.
That you bought her so she would have to use the ones with threadbare that you could read the newspaper through.
Oh, that generation was so weird. Keep that for best.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
so now we have something here by Art Junkie. Now, let's see. Maybe, oh, how lovely. Okay. I'll take this one. Yeah, we have.
I think there's a SoundCloud for it, Robin.
Oh, even better. Yay.
You've got a SoundCloud, but it's listed as Bokaroo, so I'm going to try anyway.
Maybe someday. Maybe sometime.
There we go.
Distance is a measurement of space and time. The metric between point A and point B are miles to be covered physically, voids to be filled emotionally. The calendar marks definitive dates. Days are boxed and numbered, their boundaries clearly defined, and do not allow for, maybe, sometime. I'm determined to separate the vagueness of maybe into a certainty of what may be for you and me. Close the equivocal question of someday with an absolute date and the speculation of sometime with a known time. Like with a booked plane ticket, departing on a known day with a scheduled time of arrival that requires a face-to-face greeting at a specific place for meeting, with a reservation at a final destination, and before the night comes to an end, I'll ask you if we can meet again. In which I'm sure you'll reply, maybe someday, maybe sometime.
How beautiful. Gray, what did you think of Art Junkie's piece?
Well, she has a wonderful reading voice, and I really enjoyed the poem. I enjoyed the play between, you know, distance is a measurement of space and time. The metric between point A and B are miles to be covered physically, voids to be filled emotionally. Like, you know, that's just epic, in my opinion. And then the whole thing really is epic in its wordplay. And like a booked plane ticket departing on a known day with a scheduled time of arrival that requires a face-to-face greeting at a specific place for meeting. With a reservation at final destination, and before the night comes to an end, I'll ask you if we can meet again, in which I'm sure you'll reply, maybe someday, maybe sometime. It's haunting in its simplicity, and I thought it was beautiful.
Agreed. I like, as you said, I like the way in the second stanza she quantifies the calendar. I think is really, really beautifully done. The calendar marks definitive dates. Days are boxed and numbered. Their boundaries clearly defined and do not allow for maybe sometime. I love that. I mean, that could stand alone as a brevity. And then she goes to break down, determined to separate the vagueness of maybe into a certainty of what may be. So she takes it and she separates it and turns it into a different question. And I like the way she's exemplified plane ticket, specific meeting place. You know, let's do this thing. But I'll ask you if we can meet again, in which I'm sure you'll reply, maybe someday, maybe sometime. And the artwork, the prompt, the title for it is actually Maybe Someday is the title for the artwork that she's written this to. So beautifully. Weaver, what did you think of this piece?
I was mesmerized by this. I thought that the wordplay was wonderful. I mean, really, you wanted to go to the next line as quickly as you could to see if this could carry on, if you could keep this memento going and keep me interested. And you did. And so easily, every one of those stanzas gave me something more, gave me a little bit more information about how she felt, that it was not good enough to be told someday, and it wasn't good enough to be told sometime. She wanted all of it. She wanted it planned. Not necessarily every single movement of every single day, but she wanted that relationship to have a specific time and place so she could say, this is when I'm going to meet you again, and then we can be together, and then we can take it from there. So I thought it was very, very clever and such a lovely piece of poetry. And her reading voice was wonderful, too.
It is. It reminded me of I don't remember where I saw an exchange between two people. It said, one person says, well, we should get together sometime for coffee. And the other person says, yes, okay, when? And they were, right. The other one was a vague, a general, non-specific invitation. And this other person says, okay, well, let's make it happen. Do you want to do this tomorrow? No, and the other person was, you could see they were physically uncomfortable about being trying to make them be more specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people like this go through life. You know, they won't be specific. They won't go, well, you know, it's like when you ask your mom if you could do something, she'd say maybe,
which always meant no.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, it just, and it's strange how we learn to speak the peculiar language of parenting. Like when you'd ask your mom, I'd ask my mom, gee, mom, what do you think of this? And I'd get with a very poker face, like she just swallowed a persimmon. she'd look at it, she'd go, it's different. This condemnation, it's different.
Dear.
To me, I like different. You know, yeah. Different is wonderful. But to her, different was a condemnation. It's like, oh, it's mm-hmm. different, which means mm-hmm. I don't like it. Yeah, but it's just, I was trying to explain to someone the other day, a young person, I think she's 17 years old, I was trying to explain to her the importance of context and body language. Mm-hmm. And tone. And I tried, I said, if you were to ask me, what's wrong? And I look and you go, nothing. I said, do you believe me? Mm-hmm. And she looked at this, and she, no. I said, good. You're getting the idea. Mm-hmm. I said, somebody asks you something's wrong. Don't say nothing. Like, yeah, because I said, you know, they're going to know you're lying. Just,
mm-hmm.
And this is something they don't teach in school, but they ought to.
I love
the way she's really she's captured this how vague this person is, and she wants more definite boundaries. She wants more definition to the relationship, and this other person just wants to keep it squishy.
Yep.
Yeah. Well done, Art Junkie. I like what she did it with. Just from that illustration. Okay, who got next?
All right, next we have Bibliography of the Autocratic Orthodoxy by Radio Bravo, and there's a SoundCloud for that.
Oh, very good.
Bibliography of the Autocratic Orthodoxy, poem by Radio Bravo, which is me, by the way. Circle cycling over bushy cotton pillow clouds, condensed terrain, clandestine letters draining the strained planes, painting stains drag across paper frames craven lanes, chisel etching names against dates maimed entombed, and tomes reigned. Edifices erected, subsumed, twitching, swept ravines. Planet revolution, ramble mines, cash machines. Champion sketch, etching divers, jet fuels, mine kerosene. Hands grasping, mass draping, backs enveloping, chance for scene. Stands in plant pants drew land askance, tapered meteor slants. Mother even, father sky supplants, glass magnified damp. Burning ants brandished fire mats, matting lyred camp stamped. Ramped feces wafted, vagrant trampled, silent ambled tramp. Slippery mantra droning, iron shackles, vocal cords. Saliva dripping, sponge absorb, leak, sweat dry, chambered scorch. Channel funnel, money bundle, river boats, park the short. Rubber whispers, simper whimpers, simmering shim rewards. Titan bells gong explode against Titan sails runny road. Violet stairs strode past island mares goad, last violent pair bode. Bibles leather bound, fly stifle, weather pound, nigh abode. Pontiff's papal sword, sheath, coward cause of avian crows. And poem.
Now, I have to, before we comment, he has a rather lengthy author's note here. He says, the prompt in order, prompt 45, which is keeping your head in the clouds, prompt 10, which is dogma, prompt 9, defiance, and prompt 20, inquisitor. And then he writes, I don't often argue with others anymore regarding religion or any epistemology or ontology. I find it becomes more and more juvenile and wasteful to make any sense of anything you cannot make sense of if you are immune to supernatural forces. I don't want to dive too deep into what I think or why I think what I think, because it requires another person to have the fortitude or forethought to dialogue with, and just essaying about it seems like a monumental exercise in arrogance. I cross that line, and it's something I always need to work at. I'm not sure that that's structured properly, but anyway. With that being said, I had so many discussions with theistic people in various stripes, whether it be monotheists, polytheists, pantheists, or any other flavor, and I cannot help but to cringe and wince every time I have to suffer the most unfounded and poorly thought out but mostly fallacious arguments. Belief aside, which is something I never argue, but augmentation with no thought or two-way communication becomes extremely aggravating. This is why there is the pigeon play chess meme. No matter how good you are at playing chess, the pigeon will shit on the board and peck your eyes out, or something to that effect. and author's note. Whoa, wow. Weaver, what did you think? You're in a coma.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just waxing lyrical, saying how wonderful it was and how much I enjoyed it. So that said, then over to you. I've done my bit.
I thought you were in stunned silence there for
a minute. Yeah, I was actually, because that was incredibly well done. Yeah, I really admired that. It was great.
My goodness. Any particular piece of it speak to you?
I think all of it, because it was all so clever. There wasn't any one thing that stood out for me, I don't think, only that it was incredibly well done. And the fact that you managed to get through it, and that groan at the end.
Nice. Yeah. Well, Gray, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, he's a master at wordplay, you know. The whole thing is kind of meaningless, but yet it holds meaning at the same time. You know, like, Titan's bells gong explode against Titan sails run erode. Violet stairs strode past island mare. I mean, what the hell does that mean? Quite honestly. But, you know, goad last violent prayer bowed, Bibles leather bound, fly stifle weather pound, nigh abode, pontiff's papal sword sheathed, coward cause of avian crows. You know, it's definitely impactful in its wordplay, but it's also definitely hard to get a grip on what he's actually saying as well. So
I'm reminded of 'twas brillig and the slidy toads that gyre and gimbal in the wave, all mimsy were the moor groves and the mome rats of grabe.
Yep, I like that one a lot.
But if you notice it, if you go past the writing into the structure, he has done a lot there's consonants and there's assonance and there's alliteration. People are always very familiar with alliteration because it's easy to put your finger on.
Mm-hmm.
But assonance, you hear it all the time when you listen to music lyrics, because lyricists depend a great deal on assonance, words that share the vowel sounds, but they don't really rhyme. But because they share vowel sounds, they sound like they rhyme. They sound like it belongs to it. And he's done this. And he's chiseling at names against dates, maimed, entombed, entombs, brained. You know, he's got the long A there.
Mm-hmm.
Painting stains drag across paper frames, carving craven lanes. Again, there's the long A there, the repetition of the long A.
Mm-hmm.
And condensed to rain, clandestine letters draining the strained plains. Again, he's playing with the sounds. And that's mostly, I think this is the wordplay is him making, it's the assonance. And it's pervasive through the entire thing. It's Mother Eve and Father's glass, burning ants, brandished fire, mats, matting, lyre, camp, stamped. There's the short A, repetition in that line. Ramped, vagrant, trampled, silence, ambled, tramp. Again, the short A sound.
Mm-hmm.
And he's assembling. It's like a Jenga. It's like a Jenga tower. You know, you've got all of these disparate pieces that have been jammed together, and they've formed a structure. Here we go. Rubber whispers, simper, whimpers, simpering, simmering, shimmer boards. Okay, short eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done that through the gong explode against titan sails, rung erode, violet stairs strode past, mare goad, last violent prayer bode. And he's ended the line with the same vowel sounds. Scourge, aboard, and erode, bode, abode, crows. And yeah, I agree with you, Gray. What the hell does this mean? In a way, his writing reminds me of Peter Solway, who's very similar in style, whose writing I cannot get through because it's like he's looking through the prism on this one, and I'm not seeing the same shapes that he's seeing. You know, I respect the writing because this is actually very skillful manipulation of sounds. And putting the words together in such a way that it gives you a balanced reading without really, it's just, if there's metaphor in here, Pontus Papal Sword, sheathed coward cause of avian crows. You're right. What does it mean? It's like, look at it this way. It's like a Salvador Dali painting. What the fuck does it mean? You know, you're seeing all kinds of different abstractions on a canvas. On a canvas, well, here you're seeing different abstractions in a poem. So he's in essence done the same thing with. He's made a word painting like Salvador Dali would make a painting with paints.
Yep, that's fascinating.
I can't do it. I've tried. I'm just too damn linear and logical. You know, I'm tab A slob.
Yep.
I'm sorry. This does not compute.
I agree. I tried to be all flowery and
well,
I've tried the abstractions.
Yeah, I've tried the abstractions. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. I can't. I don't have that bone in my head. But Radio Bravo does it, and he does it. This is like a crazy quilt. He's taken little scraps of this and that and patched and put something together that is quite pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
So, well done, Radio Bravo, and don't do this again, please. No, seriously, thank you for the entry. it's challenging. I mean, this kind of poetry I find very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got to approach it differently. It's not like looking at a painting of a tree and saying, oh, very nice painting of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's like approaching a Jackson Pollock and going, okay, what do I see in this? How does it make me feel?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the essence of the aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's put Radio Bravo to bed and read something that makes sense. Okay, so we have My Odious Halls of Fate. Okay, I have a strange feeling that this one's going to be a little weird, too. So let me go ahead and read this. Okay, we have Dinosphere, which I don't recognize this writer. I think they're new to our contests. I look at their page, and they've only got about 28 poems on their webpage. So this is a new writer. So welcome. Thank you for your entry. And they went to prompt 34, which is the letter, which is an interesting piece. Okay, My Odious Halls of Fate. Running away from photons of light, gaining your long silence skewered my torn flesh. Armors weigh heavy, so I don't light ruby fabrics. So I don light ruby fabrics to soak up warm red from your fatal blows. Carry your armaments while my ears implode. Anvils pulling behind the brain push me to the sun. My frame dragged to you, your imprisoned ragdoll. Bracing fingers clutched to lacerations and scars. Arms like statues still open to your daggers and fists. Eyes bloodshot with oceans poured from tear ducts. Evaporated to clouds that scream and wail the gauntlet. Your crooning kisses poisoned the rough skin to pine. The night's sweet air cascading, olive hills fade to dust. I was not sodium, and you were not chlorine. To combine as salt, pattering dead on oaken tables. It was a part. We were salt and radioactive once we were combined. But explosions ruined the material our bodies comprised, bludgeoned by traitorous archons of torturous lies, trenched our sight to the growing expanse of our trust. Your weapons raised an attack, but I couldn't mine. A decorated veteran of war, I'm seeing the ruins span time, witnessing the destruction of the earth unflinching. I sigh. The history is a broken record bumping along the line. End poem. Wow.
Wow.
That was intense. What'd you think, Weaver?
Oh, well, first of all, we have this new thing that people are doing. This one long piece of prose. Not the normal look of poetry. So this is something new that people are trying. And there's nothing wrong with it at all. I mean, there isn't. But you do need a little bit of a comma here and there would help, I think, for you to get the flow of it.
Oh, you're so conventional.
I can't help it. I cannot help it, just the way I
am. No, go ahead. Seriously.
Yeah. I love it. I like to see people, you know, trying something different. It's always good. Just don't expect me to follow on. I'll just watch in wonder. But I thought this was okay. That this is it's a lovely, clever write. It's one of these things that you think, why did I not think of that? Because that's brilliant. Well, because you're not clever enough, I say. But still, it's lovely to see it coming through. And things that you don't think about yourself or would combine yourself are there for you to enjoy. So Now, this running away from photons of light, gaining your long silence skewered my torn flesh. Armors weigh heavily, so I don light ubi fabrics. That's just, you know, again, wonderful. But I don light ubi fabrics to soak up the warm red from your fatal blows. So here we have in 1, 2, 3, 4 lines the story, which is, you know, you are obviously a knight of the realm or something, but it doesn't stop you banging me about, possibly. I'm just, that's the way I'm reading it. But, I mean, I haven't gone all the way down yet, so I'll just stop at that point and say it was wonderful. I just see poison. Oh, very good. I thought it was very well written, very interesting, very clever.
It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Great. What did you think of it?
You know, I thought the storytelling aspect was fantastic. You know, you really were engaged throughout, picturing everything that he said. And to me, this reads like a veteran that has fallen and, you know, seen the horrors of war. You know, I'm a decorated veteran of war. I'm seeing the ruins stand time, witnessing destruction of Earth, unflinching I sigh. The history is a broken record, bumping along the line. You know, it seems like that, you know. I don't know if you guys have heard, but Iran launched a ballistic missile at Israel, I guess. I don't know if it was today or not, but, you know, so, you know, like, that, the never-ending story of war, you know.
Yeah.
And war is horrifying, and peace is, you know, can be just as horrifying, I think, at times, too, so... it's just like that, the, you know, the record skipping on the same line.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just trying to scroll to his, the letter. Yeah. So it was definitely haunting and very visceral throughout. So great job. And did a fantastic reading.
Thank you. It was very visceral. I see, in my reading, I see this as a toxic relationship. My frame dragged to you, your imprisoned rag doll, bracing fingers clutching lacerations and scars, arms like statues still open to your daggers and fists, eyes bloodshot with oceans poured from tear ducts, evaporated to clouds that scream and wail regardless. Your crooning kisses poisoned the rough-skinned pine, the night's sweet air cascading olive hills faded to dust. I was not sodium and you were not chlorine. They were a toxic combination. I see this as a turbulent, toxic relationship where these people cannot, these two persons cannot free themselves of one another. Your weapons raised an attack, but I couldn't mind. A decorated veteran of war, I'm seeing the ruins span time, witnessing the destruction of the earth, unflinching I sigh. The history is a broken record bumping along the line. This is the repetition of the hurtfulness in their relationship. It just goes on and on, and they don't know how to stop it. And that's what I saw in this, was a very personal, a very visceral write, some very deep feelings, very raw emotions here expressed, and great storytelling. Like you said, it because it is not divided into stanzas, which could easily have been done here, like a 4 lines each. It would have made it a simpler read. But again, you got to wonder what's in the mind of the author in doing the one. I used to do a write like this. I would just kind of start, and I would just keep writing and writing and writing and writing. And early on, it was suggested to me by one of my readers that I try stanzas. I tried dividing into stanzas. And I found that it made it easier not only to read but to think, because the writing tended to divide itself logically in my mind. When I would go, you know, like 4 lines or two or couplets or you know, 3 lines or 5 lines, I would set up a structure and I would find it easier to write to that structure. But some people just, this is they what one of my friends called stream of unconsciousness, just writing it down. But you're right, it's got some very powerful emotions in it, and it's a very powerful write. So Dinosphere, thank you for your entry. I appreciate it. Hope to see more from you. So, okay, let's continue right along. As Victor Borges says, somebody else. One of my favorites. Love Victor Borges.
Oh, me too. Fabulous.
I actually got to see him live.
Oh, my goodness.
I did. Being in D.C., of course, you've got a lot of outlets for the arts.
Mm-hmm.
We have a place out here called Wolf Trap, which is an outdoor amphitheater.
Oh.
It's open air. It's mm-hmm. covered, almost like a bandstand. But he made an appearance at Wolf Trap 1 year back in the mid 90s. And I had grown up listening to him because my father was a big fan. And when mm-hmm. I saw that Victor Borges was going to be at Wolf Trap, I bought a ticket for myself and a friend who, as it turned out, she was a classically trained concert pianist.
Whoa.
But she was also a mathematics major. She had a doctorate in mathematics. And I said, Helena, how did you do that? She has. I was to her home. She had a concert. She had a baby grand in her entryway. And I said, she says, well, my father, and she was Polish, and her father was a Polish army officer. And my father said to me, Helena, you could be a concert pianist, or you can make a living. And she says, I became a mathematician. But she and I wouldn't you know it, and it this I found out he did this routinely is he had his son act as one of the stage managers, and you remember where he does the routine where he sticks the sheet music on the music stand, and as he starts playing the music, he pulls the sheet off and crumples it up and throws it over his shoulder.
I don't remember that part, no, but it sounds good.
Well, His son was the one that brought the music out and picked up the paper and everything. Oh, he did some of his standards. Verbal punctuation.
Oh, that was the one I was thinking about. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, he did the verbal punctuation. He did a couple of other things that we had vinyl at home. We had Victor Borges live in Boston, and I can't tell you how many times we dragged it out and played it. He did something similar to what he did on that, was where he said he would pick a theme. He would pick a musical theme, and he would play the theme as his favorite composers would have composed the same theme. And the theme he picked was Happy Birthday. And he played it according to the way different composers would have played it. Brahms or Beethoven, Bartok. He was brilliant. He was so brilliant. What did they call him? The crazy Dane or something like that. He was Danish, but he was a brilliant entertainer. So, and I have no idea how I ended up talking about Victor Borges. So, anyway, we're back from tangent land. Okay, we have Inspired by the Art of Thomas Dodd. Oh, we have Robbie's comment. One of the fans of my poetry lives in Israel. He's been living in a hotel for an extended period of time. I can't imagine what he's going through. Yeah. I have my next door neighbors. They're Ukrainian, and they have family in Ukraine. And I every once in a while go over there and say, they were trying to keep up communications with her brother, and it was getting really difficult. We Americans don't realize how easy we have it because we've never lived. I mean, even the Brits got bombed during World War II. We've never experienced that, night and day living with war in your country. We've experienced acts of terrorism, but we've been lucky in that we've never experienced war on our own shores. So it's hard to imagine what these poor people are going through.
I know.
All righty. Gray, why don't you read Afasiana's piece for us?
Okay, sure. Well, thank you. No problem.
Thank you.
I will. So we have Inspired by the Art of Thomas Dodd by Afasiana. Robbing the window of cherished memories, a little bird whispers that she was deceived, her face already stained with grief, decorated with new grips of heartbreak. 6 months in black lace, her eyes framed thusly, her hands clutch his words that she need not read. They repeat in her mind, unbidden in quiet moments, but she fears letting go of the writing. End poem. That was written to prompt 1 and 34.
Are you on mute, Bobby?
I certainly am.
Okay. I'll join you.
This is the two prompts that she selected are both of women who are obviously crying. You can see the tear stains on their faces. Interesting. When I posted those, I wondered if someone would link the two together. And bless our little Afasiana. That she did that, and robbing the window of cherished memories, a little bird whispers that she was deceived. And just this brevity is beautifully done. It's a very economical write. There's a lot of intense emotion in it with not a lot of words, so which is to me always impressive that you can write so succinctly about emotion in 8 lines. So, well done, Afasiana. Weaver, what did you think?
Yes, there's another person who's incredibly talented. That last stanza, 6 months in black lace, her eyes framed lustily, her hand clutched his words that she need not read. They repeated in her mind unbidden in quiet moments, but she fears letting go of the writing. You can understand that, can't you? It's a case of, I cannot lose that one contact I have with you. I cannot let that go either. So it will be cherished, obviously. But as you say, concise, because the words, the amount of words are not huge. And from that, you have to form yourself a beginning, a middle, and an end, and make it cohesive. Which is not always that easy. It really isn't. I have written brevities for a little while now because I wanted to reach 1,000 poems.
Good for you. You got quite the head start on me. How are you doing? What's the count?
1,010.
Show off.
I know. But it was the brevities that helped. But having done that, it has made me find it easier, because I was never one for using one word when 6 would do. Yeah, that was that.
I've done the same thing over a time last year. I was writing Lynn Gauthier. She's always holding brevity contests, and her brevities, her contests are always the brevity is 6 lines. And so participating in her contest gave me some very valuable practice at learning how to write brevities.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote one just the other day. She had a contest. Where am I? Here I am. She had a contest where her prompt was a picture of Marilyn Monroe and a quote. And the quote was, to all the girls that think you're fat because you're not a size zero. Mm. You're beautiful. You're the beautiful one. It's society who's ugly.
So true.
Yeah. And so taking, and there was a picture of Marilyn Monroe. So taking that, I wrote, I dedicated to Marilyn Monroe. I called the poem Twinkle, Twinkle.
Of
Twinkle,
course.
Twinkle. Twinkle, twinkle, fallen star, the world tried to tell you who you are. Your light so bright, they could not see. What they should have done was just let you be. While your beautiful spirit tried to rise above, tethered to the earth, all you wanted was love.
Oh, one of my favorite people. She is always, I've always had such a soft spot for her. Brilliantly done. That was lovely. So nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Believe it or not, I didn't win anything for it, but I was very happy with the way it turned out.
It's a nice feeling, isn't it, when it's some, you know, you've done something and you can actually say, I like this, and you can say it knowing that you're not showing off, you're just being honest. I love that. I love the fact that you can sort of look at something and think, oh, I did that. even if nobody else sees it or hears it, you did it. I've written something.
Yeah, I was reminded of the Elton John homage, Candle in the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I listened to, and that's what I came up with, Twinkle, and I did the parallel Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, Twinkle, I did Twinkle, Twinkle, Fallen Star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh. And I just, yeah, I actually have a couple more lines I'm going to plug in there now that the contest is over. So, but
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah, actually, let's see. Whoops, who am I going? I don't know. Hello.
Hello. Goodbye. Hello. Goodbye.
Hello, it's me. Here we go. Here it is, Twinkle. Here it is. Here's my edited version, my amended version. Twinkle, twinkle, fallen star. The world tried to tell you who you are. Up above the world so high, you shone like a diamond in the sky. Your light so bright they could not see that what they should have done was just let you be. While your beautiful spirit tried to rise above, tethered to the earth, all you wanted was love.
Perfect. And that is exactly what her life was like, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well done. That was lovely.
Thank you. Thank you. So I had a little showing off here, and we've got a little bit more than 15 minutes left. So how are we doing on our poetry, our contest poetry? What do we got left? Mr. Gray.
So next up we have The Searching Journey of Undine by Tamari.
Okay. Did
and
Pam
then I think
give
we
us
have
the
five poems after that?
Oh, okay.
No, did she requires a reader.
Oh, she does? Okay, well let me tackle this then. I will do my best to channel Pam. Okay. We don't. Whoops. What? No, I clicked on the wrong thing. I clicked on Weaver's poem. That's not what I wanted. Hello. my cursor is possessed. Here we go. Yeah, it had quit on me completely earlier this evening. There we go. The Searching Journey. Undine is one of my favorite characters. Anyway, I've written a couple poems about Undine. The Searching Journey of Undine by Pam Ray. She rises from beneath the surface of rippling ocean waves, searching for true love that is calling to her heart. She wanders the land, bare feet bruised by stones. The shore is littered with harsh stones. She walks upon their surface, a stranger to the land. She is a child of the waves. Each step away breaks her heart. Still, she must find true love. For what is life without true love but souls of hardest stone? She holds forth her shining heart, hoping one will see beyond the surface and keep her living beyond the waves. With this hope, she treads the land. She struggles to know the ways of the land and to find her twin-flamed love. Her spirit rises and falls like the waves, ever crashing upon the stones. She seeks trust beyond its surface. She needs a song within her heart. She pleads to the gods to guide her heart across the rolling hills and land. She roams upon the craggy surface, aching for the want of love. She casts wishes just like stone skipping upon the surface of waves. She longs for home within the waves. Turmoil treads within her heart. Her spirit bears the weight of stones as she walks this unfamiliar land, searching for sweet depths of love, to know a lover beyond their surface. She fades upon the surface, weeping for the waves, never having found love for a hopeful heart, rejected by this land of casted stones. Now, and I want to point out that she did this in a sestina form.
Okay.
Which is it's a very structured format. And if you notice that the repetition of phrases and words within mm-hmm. different stanzas. So my compliments to Pam on writing it in a very demanding form and doing a beautiful story, doing a beautiful job of storytelling of Undine, goes back to mythology. And are you familiar with Undine?
Not really, no, my dear. If it was, I forgot.
Okay. Well, I will grab a little bit of information on it, and I will post it in the board. But it's basically it's part of mythology. I'm trying to remember which culture of mythology Undine is in, but it has to do with her unrequited love, I believe. Let's see, Undine. Oh, here we go, European mythology. She's a water nymph who becomes human when she falls in love with a man, but is doomed to die if his love is if he is unfaithful to her.
Oops.
So it's actually, I believe it's Celtic mythology.
Is it? Oh, right.
I think it might be.
It sounds a bit like
Undine,
it,
yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. The Undines or Undines are a category of elemental beings associated with water, stemming from the alchemical writings of Paracelsus. Okay, we've got, and that's where the story of the Little Mermaid came from. Hans Christian Andersen interpreted the myth of Undine and turned it into the Little Mermaid.
Oh, that was enterprising.
Yeah,
very enterprising.
apparently it's a Greek myth, but it is you find it pervasive through Europe. So, which is why I wrote it too. I find it a fascinating. Poor women. You know, we fall in love. You know, the guy's unfaithful to us. You know, we turn into a tree or water or stone or something. It's like, we're always getting a bad end of the stick on this. I really like what Pam did with the artwork. And the artwork is called Undine.
Oh, right.
The name of the artwork is called Undine. And she's done a beautiful bit of storytelling here in a very lovely format. What did you think, Weaver?
I agree. It's quite different particular look of it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I like that. It's cool because, you know, we should all experiment, move things around a bit, get things going. But I thought, again, this is just lovely. Beautiful story, beautifully told. And then we have that, is it not the last one? The penultimate stanza, she longs for home within the waves, turmoil treads within her heart. Her spirit bears the weight of stones as she walks this unfamiliar land. Beautifully done, Pam. I really enjoyed this. What a wonderful storyline. And you did it so well. Thank you for sharing that with us.
There's actually also, and I just remembered this, there was a film in the 80s, I believe, called The Black Widow. And I know I could see the actresses that played mm-hmm. in it. I can't for the life of me remember their names right off the end. But it is a story, of course, of a woman who marries very wealthy men.
And then
dispatches them with a poison that mimics a congenital hyperventilation syndrome called Ondine's curse.
The person stops
breathing in their sleep.
Oh,
yeah,
that's clever.
It's a very well known film. I mean, it's a very well done film. It's I'll put the link to it out there. But it's back in the '80s. Deborah Winger. There we go. She plays an FBI agent, and I'm trying to remember the woman who plays the Black Widow. It's got a really twist ending to it. It's really a really good ending. But the woman who plays the Black Widow is quite beautiful, and somewhat of a chameleon. And, I recommend it. Matter of fact, I think I'll drag it up and watch it myself tomorrow. I've gave myself a little bit of a treat this week. I spent the entire week watching all 8 seasons of Game of Thrones.
Oh my goodness! That would be wonderful.
I treated myself. I've been waiting to do that for a long time, and I decided it was time.
Yes, definitely.
I just hours before the show, I finished the last episode. So
good.
Yeah, but I didn't binge watch it. I just watch a few episodes each day, and but it's different when you watch it front to back. All of it. And we're running out of time, and I'm babbling, so let's continue on. At least we can get a couple more poems done before the end of the show. Okay. Who we got next? Texture.
We have Texture by Jack Rover.
Okay. That sounds like an interesting one. Okay. You feel like reading, Gray?
Sure, he bet you. All right, so Texture by Jack the Rover. Snapshot of dripped wax poked my wretched... Sorry, let me start over. Snapshots of dripped wax poke my rusted corners. Feminine gaze, spears, hazes of imagery, piercing curtains hiding in my sight. I roll my die, reaching for understandings, flitting from my fingertips to find I'm lost. Accepting is a beginning. Insecurities reach out to bind, but acceptance is not control. Sculpting graceful harmonies starts with consideration, painted by one hand. Welcome the disquiet of her natural defiance, as these precious moments of breaking understanding are treasures to be gently caught. Mysteries don't have to be solved to be appreciated. The journey beckons. Compromise is not contemptuous or confusing. Its strength creates the space to sow understandings. Growing seeds bloom to weave creations. Wonderful flow, wondrous flow. Beauty always exists, even if the beholder's eyes were once closed. Reeling stars still smile at spring flowers when heads bowed by imprinted expectations are blinded by old mores and poem.
Well done. Well done. Weaver, what'd you think?
Well, we'll be swift because we want to get another one if we can, but I thought this was great. Texture. Snapshots of dripped wax poke my rusted corners. You've got it all there, haven't you? Accepting is a beginning. Insecurities reach out to bind, but acceptance is not to control. Yeah, I like it a lot. Very clever wordage and lovely story told and a great read. So thank you for sharing.
Agreed. I'm going to keep it brief so we can try and squeeze in one more poem. But I like the very tactile snapshots of dripped wax, poke my rusty corners. Very tactile. Mm-hmm. A lot of very graceful tactile metaphors. So nicely done, and another new writer, I think. So thank you, Jack the Rover, for your entry. Okay, who else?
Just 1 second here. So we have The Tomb by Silent Tree. I will post that to the group. Okay, it's up.
All righty. Okay, The Cane. By Silent Tree. Unfurled portrait blossom language of the mute. Ashen skin draped inkwell cobwebs gossamer. Redbreast robin perched to thread my vignettes. Satin garment hung to futile bodies feminine. In your postures, a crown contorted by the cane. As the crow-eyed prize allures me once again. Auburn gilded cups, a quill feather in the wind. Autumn robes of rust do harvest buried blades. Finger-drawn arrows tug the bowstrings of time as willow wings flock on dawn's burnt horizon. Forest shadows dance ocean waves of wheat. A naked swan's glissade tumbles to the earth. Comb mantilla whispers, a tweel-veiled mirage. Medusa rivers flowing to serpent-woven reeds. Dandelion whiskers rest granite statues' gaze. End poem. Okay, Gray, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was really strong in its visceral ability and also metaphorically rich. So I thought it was fantastic and did a great job of reading it, Bobby.
Thank you. It was a little challenging. Unfortunately, I've got this thing where I can actually read ahead of where I'm reading. Don't ask me how I do it. I couldn't explain it to you. But I really enjoyed it also. I liked the metaphors also. And Auburn gilded cups, a quill feather in the wind. Autumn robes of rust do harvest buried blades. Finger-drawn arrows tug the bowstrings of time. I like that very much. That's a wonderful, wonderful metaphor. Weaver, what'd you think?
Yes, you're quite right. This is incredibly good imagery, fabulous. I wish I could do it. But we have this. I like this so much. Satin garment hang to fertile bodies. Feminine in your postures, a crown contorted by the cane as the crow-eyed prize eludes me once again. Very good. Very well done. I enjoyed it. Thank you, Silent Tree. It was a lovely piece of poetry.
Yeah, you had me. You landed on one of the spots that I looked at that, and the spelling of fertile is obviously wrong, but I wonder if it's a corruption or a portmanteau of feudal and fertile.
But yeah, it's either spelled wrongly or it has to be that, I think, because
that's
it's
why
just,
I was thinking it's a portmanteau.
I think you're right.
The two words together, yeah, mm-hmm. Which I thought was very clever.
Very. That's, I mean, if that was done on purpose, that was incredibly clever. If that was a spelling mistake, don't tell anybody.
as my favorite character from The Lord of the Rings says, Gimli, the dwarf, that was deliberate. That was deliberate.
Yeah, exactly. I like
when
that.
He falls off the horse, that was deliberate.
I must use that one when I smack something.
Yeah, me too. Okay, what else? We got 1 minute left. We got what do we got? How much we got left?
We got two poems left.
Got two poems. Well, I guess we're going to have to save them for the next time. So anyway, well, folks, thank you for a wonderful evening. Weaver, I can't thank you enough for being there with us. My trusty co-pilot, Gray, thank you once again. You kept us on track. I'm going to make you navigator, too, next time. I'm going to give you the maps. Anyway, but thanks again, and thank you to all of the writers. And I'll be crafting another contest probably tomorrow. So, and maybe the intro music will be right this time. if I get it to fill in time.
So, do well.
Good night, folks.
Good night, my dears. Love you.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Gray. Good night, Bobby.
Much love, Bobby. Much love, Weaver. Goodbye.
All back at you.